whole stool here tonight. Hey, everybody, I'm Dana. I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be here tonight. It's actually really surreal to be here. Dale, thank you for asking me to be here. I don't even know what I want to say. I just suddenly, whenever I get up behind the podium, I become non-alcoholic. But I know I'm really one of you guys. And it took me a little while to sit in the rooms here to realize that I'm a lot like you. I am one of you. My sobriety date is November the 14th, 2008. It's coming up in 4 days. And I don't know why before an anniversary, I just get absolutely out of my head sometimes. So it's really good to be here tonight and to participate in my own recovery. Took me a long time to realize that I wasn't living life. As a matter of fact, the more I drank, the closer I got to death. I didn't realize that either until I got here. So grew up very normal. Parents, middle-class family, hardworking. They instilled a work ethic in us. They instilled the values in us that they believed were important. Hardworking people. I have a brother that's also a member of this fellowship. He's also the person that brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 20 years ago. But as I stand here, if you calculate my date, I haven't stayed sober the whole time that I've been around here. I have a really hard head. So my parents always sent us to private school. We went to school with kids that were wealthy and they didn't have to ask for anything. It was pretty much given to them. And so my parents overcompensated a lot for that fact. And my brother and I knew from a very young age that, we took that for granted. So we didn't have to ask very hard to get what we wanted. No wasn't really a word that was used in our household. And I believe that long before I took a drink of alcohol, I was very deceptive. Parents, the friends that I had, those parents thought I was the best kid. But I was the kid that was putting their kid up to doing the bad stuff. And that's just how I was from the get-go. I did it to my brother all the time. He would be the one to get caught, but I'd be the one to put him up to it, you know, and that's just how I was. And I didn't have any thoughts about it, really. I was very easy for me to look at you and tell you a lie versus telling you the truth. I learned that really early. And I don't know. About fifth grade, my parents pulled us out and pulled me out and put me in public school. And I found the people that I wanted to run with. You know what? So my house was like really boring. And I had this little friend that was my first friend, and she was 9 years old, smoking her mother's cigarettes and lighting firecrackers off of them. And I was like, this is the stuff that I want to do. This ain't happening at my house. So I was already seeking, you know, a little bit of excitement in my life. And so when I drank really from a very young age, and I mean, just starting with taking sips off your dad's beer. You know, I gulp the beer. Most people sip the beer. I know you understand gulping. Anyway, I do remember, though, I have a tendency to jump all over the place. My mother and father, we were put into a lot of things, sports. We were made to do things. We were made to be very active kids. And I was really good at everything that I did do. I was very competitive. And if I wasn't good at it, I quit doing it. And that's the way I did life. So I do remember really at the age of 17, sitting down, getting drunk for the very first time, getting drunk where I actually felt the effects of alcohol. Literally alcohol that night, Evan Williams, brown liquor. That was my thing. That's where I started. We're playing poker, shot for shot. And I felt it going down. And I remembered alcohol answered all the unanswered questions. that I had that I didn't even know that I had. It made me absolutely feel a part of what I was doing. And I realized from then on that I wanted to do that every day. And I had a lot of fun drinking. And it didn't take me long, though, to start having blackouts. I thought that was just normal drinking. I surrounded myself with people that did the same thing that I did. And so nobody was really doing anything different than me than I thought. Probably about the age of 18, 19, 19. So a lot of my friends went off to college. I did not want to go to college. I wanted to work and stay behind. I worked in the restaurant industry. If you know anything about the restaurant industry, you can get a lot of things in the restaurant industry. And there's a lot of people there that were doing the same things that I was doing. I will say drugs is a huge part of my story. Out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I will call them alcohol enhancers. I will try not to talk at length about those things, but I will tell you that I had a hard time identifying an Alcoholics Anonymous because I did think that I was of another fellowship. And so, I came in, after I came in, I said I was, as a multitude thing of things. I was cross addicted, dual addicted, until a lady asked me one day if I was addicted to crosses. And I was like, okay, and so anyway, at age 19, everybody went away. I started hanging around with people that were really partying, and they were really doing some things that required them to carry guns on their sides. And I really thought I had really arrived. That didn't last long. I started riding on motorcycles. I started disappearing. As a matter of fact, they weren't the kind of people that I'd bring home to my parents. As a matter of fact, my parents said, please don't bring them home to our house. So I did a lot of things undercover. And I left one morning. I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I snuck. I didn't. Well, I mean, I was a grown up, still living in my parents' home, but I left. I went out on a motorcycle ride. We were riding with eight other motorcycles on a single lane highway. We were the front motorcycle. I was a passenger on that motorcycle. There was a car that was kind of tailing the last motorcycle, and it sped up and it went around every single one of the motorcycles and it clipped us 175 miles an hour. So, whew, I haven't thought about that for a long time. On impact, my friend lost his leg. I stayed with the bike. The bike flipped over, came down. It split my helmet. They medevaced me to Mary Washington Hospital. And so there was a God in my life long before I even realized it. As a matter of fact, I didn't want to hear anything about God, but someone was looking out for me. And what was really cool in that is that my parents got there. They got to see about 25 bikers around, like people with beards down to here and ponytails. And they got to watch a group of people like rally around people and really be a fellowship. I mean, who knew that you could learn about a fellowship before you even got to the fellowship? But that's what I saw. I saw kind people. And so anyway, that started my love of opiates. I had to have 10 surgeries. They were going to amputate my leg. They told my parents on the way to the hospital they were going to amputate my leg. So the only reason I share about that story is because that's what I did to the people in my life. I didn't give a crap about what you thought. I just did what I wanted to do, and that's the way they had to find out, Luckily, they saved my leg. I'm standing here with two legs tonight. A lot of surgeries, a lot of rehabilitation. I also picked up an opiate addiction along the way. Anyway, my 20s, I don't want to stay drunk too long. I really, with an anniversary coming up, I have almost just as much experience being sober, and I don't want to stay drunk too long. I didn't. I drank pretty much the same every single day. I made a promise to myself in the morning that I wouldn't drink. By whatever time it was okay for me to be drinking, that's when I was drinking. And so you just, when you drink like that, I found that I ran through people. You know what I mean? I became the person that I was the person at the bar who had the gift of being the one that was still standing at midnight, last call. You know, the one that you really wanted to punch in the face because I wasn't a quiet drinker. I really disturbed the peace when I drank, when I was around. Trouble usually wasn't far behind. So anyway, it's really weird when you sit around and you look at other people's lives and you wish you were living somebody else's life. And that's where I was by the age of like 26, 27 years old. And I literally visited, I went to doctors, to psychologists, because I never went to the psychiatrist. I wasn't smart enough to be prescribed medication. I would live on the self-help aisles at Barnes and Noble. Back then they had Barnes and Noble. I had 18 meditation books that I was going to read every day, you know, and I was going to fix myself. I went to these places, to these doctors, and the one thing that they'd want to talk about was the drinking, and that's the one thing that I really did not want to tell the truth about. How do you not drink? You know? So, my brother got into some really, really serious trouble with the law. He made the news. He started going to AA due to legal reasons. He was really young. He was probably about 24, 25 years old. And we were living under my parents' roof, and I realized, even though I was still drinking and using, I realized that something looked different in his life. And we were the two people that were in the room together when we were drinking, and we couldn't be in the room together. But I realized that we could be in the room together. And he was talking differently to me. He would try to 12-step me, really. He would try to, you know, talk to me about his drinking. And of course, I'd laugh about it or shrug it off. And then I have one of my dearest old friends here tonight. Not to put her on blast, she's not one of us, but she knows what it's like to live with one of us and be around people like us. And anyway, I think it was probably about the age of 28. We were all partying at my parents' driveway because that was what we did. We just partied in my parents' driveway. They didn't care. Like, we never had curfews when we were growing up. We pretty much, here's the deal. We had to have a job and we had to have decent grades, and we did. And so we just kind of did whatever we wanted to do. And they never really told us anything. They were very naive to alcohol. Neither of them drank. Both of them come. We had we, mo Both sides of my family is littered with alcoholics and people with mental health problems, untreated. And so they just kind of overlooked what we did. And anyway, we were at partying in the driveway, and I noticed there was a car there in the driveway that night, and I didn't know who it was, and I asked my mom, and she told me who it was. My brother was going to meetings with this young man, or he was, you know, trying to help him. I don't know what the deal was, but anyway, she said the name, and I was like, ah, dude, I haven't seen this dude in a long time. So I hung out, you know, and I'm drunk. They're coming back from an AA function. And I mean, he happens to be sitting here in the room tonight, you know? And so he was right there just beginning AA. We were a good distraction with one another. He started calling the house to talk to me instead of my brother. It didn't take us too long to, well, I hadn't even been to AA yet. But it didn't take us too long to start drinking together. And that lasted probably about a whole 3 months. And I do remember an altercation in the kitchen where my brother came and had to take me away because that's what I did. You know what I mean? Volatile, angry. That's what alcohol started doing to me. It just brought out everything that, you know, I just became the person that I least wanted to be. And I was. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. 28 years old, Church on the Rise in Culpeper. Big, huge meeting back then. Room was full. My brother took me to the meeting. I stayed in AA for about a whole 6 months. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't want to talk to ladies because I hated them, quite frankly. And the only steps that I worked were the steps that I had to walk up to get into the church. You know, I don't stay that long. I didn't stay. And so, and quite frankly, you guys were really old and really boring. And if I had to do that 24 hours a day, one day at a time for the rest of my life, I really, really, thanks. I'll refund my misery. And you did talk about some not yets that were going to happen to me. I wasn't married, so I didn't get a divorce. I had lost jobs, but I'd found jobs, so I was fine with that. I didn't lose a house because I lived at my mom and dad's, so the consequences hadn't really happened in my life. And but I continued to drink, careless, fancy free in the wind, doing what I do. That relationship went on. I actually got in trouble with the law. I'm boundary challenged when I drink. I go places uninvited. You tell me not to come, and I'm going to show up on your doorstep. You know what I mean? And not at a, like a reasonable time at like 7:15 in the evening. I'm going to show up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the in the morning. You know what I mean? And so I was told not to come. I mean, come on. And I went. You know what I mean? And for the first time, I realized I got myself into some trouble that I can't get out of because when you get involved with the police, you can't get out of trouble that you get involved in. And you know, and I knew my mommy and daddy couldn't fix it for me. And I also had some alcohol enhancers on me. I didn't think they'd find them. I mean, literally, I had it under the floorboard in my car. It took them like 2 seconds, probably not even, to find those things. So, you know, I came back. So I went to treatment as a result of legal percussions. I went to a damn good treatment center over in Winchester. It was good. 28 days free of any substances. That's the first time in my life in a really long time that that happened. They said 1 out of 10 of you will stay sober. And I looked around at all of you and sized you up because I was going to be 1 out of 10, you know, and came out, went back to AA, did pretty much the same thing that I did, except I was a little bit more serious because I had to report to probation. So, you know, when you have that over your head, it's pretty easy to do what you need to do. But, you know, I had the gift of gab, and so I was able to go before him about 2 or 3 months, and he was like, "You're doing what you're supposed to be doing in AA. Just know I can call you back in anytime in the next year, you know." And I was like, "Okay. Good." So, I had almost right around a year in AA. I went right back to my old ways. I did the marijuana maintenance plan in AA. My parents came to my first anniversary because back in the days around here, we had anniversary meetings and, they came, they were happy, they were out in the audience, they were crying. I was up at the podium crying for that 1 year, but that's because I didn't have that 1 year You know what I mean? I'm a fraud, but they're happy because I'm sober. And I did that for 3 years. I got out of treatment in 2005. I did that for 3 years. Of course, the result was is that I went back out and I drank. November 13th, 2008, I got myself in an emotional tailspin. I'd pretty much known I was going to drink that day. I felt like it was pre-planned. I had started behaving the way that someone who was already drinking was acting, and the only thing that was absent was a drink. So I have to share this story because it's really funny. I showed up at Dale's house. He was trying to taper off at that time. He was drinking Natural Light. I hated Natural Light, but anything will do. He was getting out of the shower. I grabbed the beer. It was very dramatic. I grabbed the beer out of the fridge. I went in. I walked in, and he was standing at the sink, and he like grabbed my arm, and I was like, "Oh, he cares." He was like, "You're not gonna drink my beer." So I was like, "Oh wow," you know what I mean? So there it was. Not much of a relapse. I think I took a Klonopin, and I drank four Natural Lights, and I passed out. That was it. I'm gonna tell you what, though, that one drink that night made me not want to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous because I really didn't want to tell you what had happened, you know? And he wasn't around, so it didn't even matter. But I did. I happened to call another alcoholic in the program. I did get phone numbers when I get here and ever got here, and I did use them every once in a while. And I did happen to make the right decision that morning, and I did call another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said, "You know what? Who cares? You drank. You're an alcoholic." No big surprise. Go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I did, y'all. I did that, and still prideful, still really didn't want you to talk to me. And back then, I mean, people were like a little bit more brutal than they are in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings today. You know, you have nothing legitimate to say. Take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. If we want to know about getting drunk, we'll ask you. I mean, that's literally what people said. I really didn't want to hear that from people. So I went on and did this program. I actually got a sponsor. She was the meanest woman in AA, because I was told I was angry. Go figure. And I'm really grateful that I'm so brave that I go ask her husband if she'll sponsor me. Gives me her phone number, and I call and I asked her, and she said yes. And I found out she's one of the kindest people ever. You know what I mean? She had a lot of alcoholics in her life. She had lost a couple of people that she loved to this disease, and she had a big heart, and she had a really active person in Alcoholics Anonymous as her sponsor before, and they took her through the book. They showed her how you work this program, and she was able to sit down with me on a weekly basis, and she passed that on to me. And I'm so grateful for that. You know what I mean? Because the deal is I stand here tonight because I am able to help other people. You know what I mean? It doesn't even necessarily mean that I have to tell you who I am or break my anonymity. It just means kindness can go a long ways. I'm sure I ran into a lot of you before I ever got here to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are some important things I forgot to say. My home group is the Rapidan group. It meets on Tuesdays and Friday nights. It's a 7:30 meeting. We lovingly call it the graveyard meeting because from Labor Day to September, we sit out in the graveyard and have a meeting. What a great place. Some people think that's weird, but really, it's just a good reminder of where I'm going to go if I go back to the place that I come from. And it's actually very peaceful. I believe very much it's a small home group. I believe very much in service. There's only a few of us to carry that out, and I've always had multiple service positions in my home group. I do believe in being available to carry the message today because I have a message today. I moved right along in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had the privilege of sponsoring women. It's been wild, and I've had different sponsors. I haven't had the same sponsor the whole time, and each one of those women have provided a valuable lesson to me in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time that I needed it in my life. And plugged right along and got married. I'll go back to the story. Got married 12, 12, 12. And it was a miracle. I've been sober for 4 years. He's sober. I actually 13 stepped him. If that's not even a thing, there is no 13 step, but he had 11 months. It was a miracle. And finally get this thing right, put a band-aid on a bullet hole. Know what I mean? Got married, did this thing, brought all of our, we're not good relationshipers here if you haven't figured that out. Brought all of that into the marriage. I'm a fighter and he's a runner. Not a great combination. And so there was a lot of running and there was a lot of fighting. And he returned to drinking. And I didn't, but I was really angry and I was not practicing principle in all my affairs. So I'm going to talk about what happened. I've been sitting here. So about 2020, we realized that we were not going to stay married to one another. Probably lived that way for a little while until one of us took action and went to attorney. We lived in the house, separated legally. I don't recommend that for alcoholics. So he was sober at the time. I was dry as anything. I mean, literally, light a match near me. Hanging on, not really carrying a message in Alcoholics Anonymous, really carrying a mess. Really. I stayed here white knuckling it. I didn't drink. Damn it, I'm not gonna drink. I'm not gonna drink. But I did everything else that I shouldn't have done. It's really wild. I say that. How is it that we can be so kind to strangers walking into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? You know what I mean? We want them to come back. We want to keep coming back. And then in our own homes, we struggle to be kind to the people that we love and that we live with. And that's what was going on. And so we got divorced in 2021. I realized when I left that day and I left my key behind, I didn't realize it immediately, but what I realized is that I left my higher power behind. I would have told you that I believed in God and I had a higher power, but I didn't realize that I had made that another human being. So I moved close to where I work up in Fredericksburg. I had no network of people there. The only thing I did was work in that area. I lived in an apartment by myself, isolated on the third floor. I pretty much, for that next year, was so angry. Pretty much my speech to or prayers was yelling, cursing at that God that I thought loved me and that I thought I loved. And I got down to two meetings a week. I was looking over the balcony of like some evenings and like thinking about it. I want to jump. And I was trying to talk myself out of coming back to our or being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really literally almost talked myself out of my seat. I was so angry. And it was just like the last night. It was that day that I happened to call a person in Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me to get my butt back to an AA meeting. I happened to call somebody when I was sitting on my balcony that night, someone that was like long term in sobriety. And they said, you know, if you keep doing this, you're gonna get drunk. Get your butt back to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, there's one tonight at 7 o'clock. I expect to see you there. And I went back there. And that was in January of 2023. It's almost been 2 years. And I've been busy as hell here ever since. Literally, this is not a joke to me. This is about life or death. I have the power to destroy myself. Nobody else has that power. The things that I have in my head still today, you know, this talks to me, and when I'm not connected and I'm not plugged in, look, the truth is the beast is still in the cage. Literally, it is. And really didn't want to drink. I really didn't want to drink, but what I realized is that I needed a higher power in my life. I realized that alcohol did not work for me probably 2 years before I stopped drinking, but I just didn't know how to quit drinking. And I really didn't know what to do, what I would do without it. You know, but I continued to drink because we do, but we get so damn lonely and isolated. But I got back to that place again in my own recovery, and you can't stay there. And I realized that if I didn't come back here and if I didn't do what was suggested of me, like really all of it, not cafeteria style, I can't pick and choose, and I can't do this without a higher power. I promise you, I literally I was insane at like 13 years, absolutely insane, talking myself back into a drink. And so I got super busy again, and I started praying like I started praying in a way that I've never prayed before. And man, I was literally that girl that came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to hear about the steps that said God. I didn't want to hear about your gratitude. I just didn't want that to have to be a part of this deal. But I realized it was the missing ingredient. It was the thing that was keeping me stuck and keeping me dry. And so I believed in the third step. You know what I mean? I had to turn it over. And if I'm not turning it over today, I go right back to step two. When I try to get up on this, it's funny that I'm standing on this little mini platform. When I get up on the stage and I want to be the director of things, I become insane again. When I want to get my way, when I want you to think like I think, and I think I have the power to do that, I step over that God boundary, and I'm self will run riot, literally. And I have to be careful, you know, because I want to do it because I'm so type A. And I want to do that. I've been friends with this gal for a while, about 6, 7 years. We had attended meetings together, and she had her and her husband both had about 26, 27 years of sobriety, and they went back out. And they almost died getting back in. And but literally this woman, I'd been sitting there for 13 years. This woman had a year of sobriety again, and her spiritual life and her relationship with a higher power was admirable. You could see it. Like the things that would get me off balance, she's just like, I'm good. I'm good. She had a peace and a calm about her. And so, I had a sponsor at that point only by name. And I never really talked to her. So really, I was the one that was sponsoring myself. I started asking her the things that she was doing. And I was trying to take notes. I was trying to do it on my own. I was calling her and stuff. And then finally, after a couple of months, I was like, okay, let's make this thing official. Will you sponsor me? Like literally, she had something. It's really true. Find somebody that has what you want around here. You know what I mean? I do not like the phrase stick with the winners. I don't think we're qualified to say who's a winner and who's a loser. Because I do believe if you're sitting here tonight and you're trying, you're a winner. Freaking, I mean, And so we started this deal. She, of course, when you get a new sponsor, they want you to start over. So I was like, way past due on a fourth and a fifth step. And so we did one, and she it was thorough. It was probably the most thorough one that I've ever done. And it was okay, man. My first step was okay. Like for the first time, because I didn't trust ladies, what I found out later sitting in the rooms of AA is that I wasn't a very trustworthy person. You know what I mean? Turn your back, I'm ripping you off. So it's hard to trust people when you're like that. And we sat down, we did that fifth step. But she is a very spiritual woman. So my work has really been in six and seven. It's been important to identify my defects of character because of that beast still being in the cage and still its propensity to rear its ugly head if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, because the real deal is I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. That's who I am at by default. And so those defects of character are still there. I still act out on them sometimes. And what I realized, the only difference between defects of character, my shortcomings, well, the shortcomings are the things that I've identified as my defects of character that I'm not, that I have the ability to correct today with a power greater than myself. And they're the things like, I'm supposed to be at work at 8:30. Let me tell you the truth. Some days, most days, I get there at 8:35. That's something I have the power to correct. That's a shortcoming. Let me get in one more thing before I go to work. And if I stay 5 minutes later, then it's really good, right? I made good. I'm not cheating anybody. I mean, stuff I can justify to myself. I did identify, I would tell you that I made all my amends. Which is really scary, but the fact of the matter is that all the people in our lives, the people that didn't give up on us, they just want us to be a part of their life. I mean, that's what I found out when in the ninth step, when I went to make those amends to people, it's not as scary as you think, and everybody wanted me to participate. I mean, it's nothing like being in a room with a bunch of people and not participating. I mean, I know most of you know what that feels like. The lights are on, but nobody's at home. What's been really important today for me is 10, 11, and 12. Literally, I have had some emotional bottoms in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really surprised that I'm still sitting here. I can't do this thing without a higher power. There are things that I have to do here on a daily basis to maintain a spiritual condition. I have to, I have readings that I like to read every morning. First, my day has to start with prayer, first and foremost. I mean, and sometimes I want to get in the bed at night because I like to end my day with prayer too. And sometimes I get in the bed at night and I'll forget, but I really intentionally get out of the bed and do it again, because let's face it, if I put as much effort into my recovery as I did into my drinking, I'd be really in a good place. And so every day, I really have to give it over. I mean, so moved back home to my childhood home at the age of 49 to live with my mother. My father was getting ill at that time, and I moved back home to live with them. And my father has dementia, and so he's had to go into assisted living since then. And I think about just the values that this program has taught me. You know what I mean? Being able to show up, because I don't want to show up. Practicing these principles in all my affairs. I really, really try very hard, and sometimes I fall really short. In doing that, but I think about I got to spend some time with my dad today. I ran from my parents, and they're the people I hurt the most, and it's really nice to be able to do this thing. I just left a career in corrections. Corrections, you can't correct this. You can't. You can, there's a solution to this. But, I'm the one that has to do the work. And I'm lazy and I don't always want to do the work, but the results are nil if I don't do the work. Don't really know. I think I want to end a little bit early. I'm really grateful that you asked me to speak. I didn't know what I was gonna, it's really surreal for me to be here. I literally, and this is not a talk of Al-Anon, by the way. But it's really interesting how, our lives intersect with other people. This is a family disease, literally. I impacted everybody's life that I'd, when I was drinking, I touched everybody, in a way that wasn't the greatest. And I affected their lives in a negative way. And what I realized is that I was so angry for a couple of years that I literally, my sponsor's really good at today at saying, pray about it, pray for them, and take a look in the mirror. And really what that does is it puts the focus right back on me. Because that's the only thing that I have the ability to change. What I'm going to say, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to act. I mean, and like talk about the miracle of AA, my biggest resentment asked me to speak. Literally. I realized that the power it took for me to hate him was really doing me in. And I realized that a part of this deal is really about forgiveness. It really is. I kept myself a prisoner, literally, because I was so angry about the circumstances. My life today looks absolutely nothing like I thought it would look like at the age of 51. Literally. Who wants to be living back at home with your mother? I'm basically my mother's husband.
Good.
Yeah. And it's okay. It really is. It's okay. If I shut my mouth, y'all, if I shut my mouth, I get really scared to speak at this meeting because I literally came in. I was here when it began. And I would like sneak in last minute, sit in the back of the row. But I always listened. You know what I mean? Before I understood that I could stay. I didn't just have to listen. I could be a part of this thing, you know? And everybody has a story. And I do believe that one day, if you haven't heard your story, stay here long enough. Really. It's so important. And I'm so thankful that I said it last week. I was actually had the privilege of giving my sponsor her chip. And she doesn't realize how important she is to my life. You know what I mean? And I said that night that I got to see my father today. I got to talk to God all day today, and I got to be with y'all today. And that's the deal. And that's that gratitude that I really hated that y'all talked about. But I you can't be here this long and not feel it. And I want to keep it because you always, I have to remember that God allows me to match calamity with my serenity. But we are not a glum lot. I mean, literally, I mean, you get here in your 20s and you're like, party's over so soon? It was, you know, once I came to my very first meeting, my drinking never, never looked the same again. Even though I kept doing it, I always proved it always proved to be a bad idea. And I'm just glad to be available today. I work where you get to help people in recovery. They literally don't know what that means to me. You know what I mean? You get to work with people sometimes you don't even realize that you're working with people. And you just root for them secretly. Anyway, I don't know why I get so sappy. The one thing that I hate being in Alcoholics Anonymous is vulnerable, but it's the one thing I realized I had to be was vulnerable. You know what I mean? Because y'all have the power, the ability to save my life. And it's been my experience that if you don't grow here, you go. You know, so I wish everyone recovery one day at a time, sobriety one day at a time, and just know important how important. Hopefully, I hope you realize how important your seat is here, because I've forgotten and left a few times, and I've been lucky enough to make it back alive and pretty much unscathed. Thank you for letting me talk tonight.